Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Pulitzer winner Hedrick Smith's latest book, Who Stole the American Dream, asks a very pointed question. Will America survive? He argues that we've become two Americas, divided by power, money, and ideology, at a time when the nation no longer has common causes to pull us together, whether it's fighting Hitler or communism or rocketing off to the moon. Our biggest challenge? The gross inequality of income and wealth in America that's resulting in the undermining of the middle class and the loss of the American dream for far too many. Hedrick Smith is a Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times reporter and editor. He's an Emmy Award-winning producer and correspondent, and he's the author of The Russians and The Power Game, both bestsellers, and he speaks in town tonight. And Hedrick Smith, it's a pleasure to have you. Welcome
Steve,
to Kansas City.
It's great to be with you. Nice to be back in Kansas City. Been here before. Love your city.
Great. Thank you. And your message in this book, Hedrick, is not a happy-go-lucky one, to say the least. How prepared are Americans to swallow the very bitter medicine you're prescribing here in your book about what we need to do to go forward?
They're already swallowing it.
Yeah.
They're already swallowing it. What I'm trying to do, you know, I didn't start out to write this book quite the way it came out. I had a lot of questions in my mind. The title of the book, when I sat down with my publisher to sign a contract, was The Dream at Risk. It's 2009. We all knew things were terrible then. But flash forward today. Right today, while we're sitting here, Wall Street is celebrating record after record, day after day.
Yeah.
Main Street is dying, one celebrating, the other stagnating. Interesting, since 2008, corporate profits have risen 20% a year, actually 20.1% a year on average for the last 4 years, and average family incomes have gone up 1.4% each year. That's what's been going on, frankly, for the last 30 years. That is the pattern.
And that capitalizes what you're talking about here.
Absolutely.
In this book, right?
It's going on right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, corporate profits are capturing the largest share of the nation's total income today that they have since 1950. And wages are at their lowest percentage of national income since 1966. That's today.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this has been going on a long time. And what got me was I started out looking at how do we get into the collapse of 2008? What led to it? I looked into housing, the subprime crisis. I'd done other stuff on Walmart and the way it pushed a lot of American production overseas. I'd done mm-hmm. something on the 401k system. I had done something on the healthcare system, and I began to see that there was a pattern here, and I wondered where it began, how it began. How do we go from a society that had shared prosperity back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, had effective bipartisan politics,
yeah.
where the Democrats and Republicans fought, of course, but they eventually came together on things like Medicare, on the budget, on the Cold War, on all kinds of issues they came together. And today we have gridlock, partisan gridlock, and we have this lopsided inequality in our economy. How did it happen?
And you found a moment. In fact, you describe it, Hedrick, as the defining moment, sort of a source of this book. And I'd never heard this before, this memo that Lewis Powell wrote back in the early 1970s in the months before he became a U.S. Supreme Court justice. What did he write, and why was this such an important moment as far as you're concerned here?
I'm going to tell you, but let me also admit, I ran the New York Times Washington Bureau. I was the Washington Bureau chief in the late 70s. The Powell memo had been circulating secretly among business leaders at that time. I had no idea it existed.
I feel bad. I'd never heard of it before.
And I gave a talk recently at the home of Mark Shields, the syndicated columnist,
sure.
the guys on PBS.
Terrific, yeah.
And a whole bunch of journalists were there. You know, Jim Lehrer of PBS was there, you know. And Bob Schieffer, the host of Good Morning America. Not Good Morning America.
Talk of the Nation.
The Sunday morning.
CBS Face the Nation.
Face the Nation. Face the Nation. And I gave a talk, and I told them what I'm about to tell you and your listeners. There was only one other reporter out of 45 reporters there who had ever heard of the Powell
memo.
This is today.
Yeah.
Historians discovered it before we in the press did. What's interesting is, just to give you the context, what middle class power in the 1970s and 60s depended on middle class, the connection between middle class power and middle class prosperity. The prosperity depended on the power. Strong labor movement, strong women's movement, strong consumer movement, strong environmental movement, strong peace movement. All those things pushed Washington to enact policies that helped protect the middle class, the safety net, raising minimum wages, protecting workers. And that promoted, along with other things, promoted the general prosperity of the middle class.
Yeah.
Powell, who was a corporate attorney, came from Richmond, Tidewater, Virginia, drawl, soft-spoken kind of guy, but not soft-spoken in terms of his feelings about the American free enterprise system. Big advocate of business, as you might imagine, since he represented them in court, and a big foe of labor. And he was talking to some of his friends at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he was talking about how labor and environment and the women's movement were all pushing business around. And they said, why don't you write it down? So he wrote it down. And he wrote what is now known historically as the Powell Memorandum in August 1971. And what Powell said was this. He said the American free enterprise system is under mortal assault. Now, that's a bit of an exaggeration, I mean, to put it mildly. But anyway, he said it's under mortal assault from organized labor, from environment, from women's movements, from the consumer movement, all these movements. And the reason is that you business leaders are not represented in Washington. You have ceded the political field, the terrain, to these other movements. Now, you need to get to Washington and fight for your rights. And you need to go after your foes aggressively, go after these other movements, seize the high ground, pool your money, stop fighting among yourselves, organize. And that's what they did.
So say hello to big-time lobbyists, say hello to organizing the nation's capital, all that stuff, right?
You know, Steve, I couldn't believe it. I saw some of it when I was running the bureau for the New York Times, but I didn't realize the extent of it. When Powell wrote his memo, there were no more than 175 companies in America that even had offices in Washington. You know, within 4 or 5 months, the Business Roundtable had been formed in response to Powell's memo. That's the 150 largest blue chip companies in America. General Motors, General Electric, DuPont, IBM, you name them, okay? They organized and set up this thing. They've now become the most powerful voice of business in Washington politically. All right. And then the 175 offices suddenly mushroomed to 2,425. By 1980, before Reagan was elected, 50,000 people were working for business trade associations. There were 9,000 registered business lobbyists, 130 for every member of Congress. There were 8,000 business PR people. They swarmed all over the place. What I call Powell's army got formed. And what happened was they ambushed the Democrats in Congress in the late 70s and Jimmy Carter in the White House. And actually, the first really big changes in American policy occurred not under Reagan, to my surprise, I'll admit it, but under Jimmy Carter and the Democrats.
You point that out in the book. Yeah.
It was a real surprise to me. A lot of this stuff. We saw some of it. Labor was trying to push for better organizing laws. Ralph Nader, the consumer activist, he was trying to push for a Consumer Protection Bureau. We saw those things getting defeated. We didn't fully understand it. But then we saw the 401k plan came in, shifted all kinds of financial responsibility from corporate books to private pocketbooks and private checkbooks of the employees.
People had to start paying out of their own pocket for their own retirement as opposed to getting their own pensions.
Yeah. Absolutely. Instead of getting a lifetime pension from their employer, fully paid from the day you retired till the day you died, 84% of the workers in 1980 had a lifetime pension. Today, 30%. That's all part of the 401k business. And what that means is that people have to pay for their own retirement and people have to pay for more and more. A lot of those changes occurred at that point.
We're visiting with Hedrick Smith, the Pulitzer Prize winner, about his book, Who Stole the American Dream? I should point out he'll be speaking tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch downtown at 14 West 10th Street. You can RSVP by going to kclibrary.org. You know, some folks might be listening to this, Hedrick, and thinking, okay, if corporate profits are up to the extent that they are, what's so wrong with that? Because it's going to trickle down. America will be lifted up by this prosperity eventually. We're seeing the unemployment rate drop now. We're climbing out of this recession. What's so bad about all of this?
Well, we've heard that argument for 30 years. And what's happened is the middle class has taken it in the chin while it's been going. In fact, it hasn't trickled down. Wealth has trickled upward. I just mentioned one big way in which it's trickled up. Corporations used to pay for retirement and health care. They don't pay it anymore. They've made more profits as a result of that, and there's a more burden on the middle class. But let me just tell you a couple of things. These two numbers blew my mind when I came into them. If you look at the American economy from 1945 to 1975, the productivity of the American workforce roughly doubled. It rose 97%. The income, the salaries of the average middle American rose 95%. 97% growth in productivity, 95% growth in their salaries, which means their standard of living. And it was almost dollar for dollar as the country got more profitable, as the economy grew, as corporations got more profitable. The rising tide literally lifted all boats. Mm-hmm. Everybody shared in that. From 1975 to 2011, the productivity of the American workforce rose 80%. Not as good, but pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And it produced a lot of growth. It generated 40 million new jobs. But the average salary of middle Americans rose only 10%.
Wow.
80% up in productivity, 10%. What that means is the people in the middle were stuck. In fact, the Census Bureau told us last year that the average male worker in 2011, when you adjust for inflation, made exactly the same pay as in 1978. 3 decades of going nowhere. Now, going nowhere at a time when they are now paying for their retirement and they're now paying for a bigger share of their health care.
Mm-hmm.
So the burden is getting heavier. Medical costs are going up dramatically. Cost of college education is going up dramatically. So middle class wages and salaries and living standards are not going up, but the big costs for the middle class are going up. So when people say to you, well, corporations are profiting, we're getting unemployment is going down bit by bit, so what does it matter? What it matters is the middle class can't keep up. The middle class is taking a hit, and the money is going to the top.
Yeah.
CEO pay over this period of time that I mentioned, 78 to today, up 350%. The earnings of the people on top 1% up 600%. Zero at the middle, 600% at the top. The money is going to the top. In 2011, you won't believe these numbers. I can't believe these numbers. I've looked at them. I can hardly believe them. In 2011, the nation grew. The income of the nation grew. GDP went up. The top 1% captured more than 100% of the growth.
Wow.
How could they capture more than 100%? 114% they got.
It took down. It went
down. Because
the
other 99% taken together lost money. Their incomes of the bottom 99% in 2011 collectively went down, and the top 1% went up. Now, economists say that's not only unfair, it's not smart economics. The best growth occurs when you have incomes closer together. And it is, they literally say it is destructive to growth to have high inequality of income. And Citigroup says the inequality of income we have today, this is Citigroup now, this is not a liberal Keynesian economist, says we have the greatest inequality of any nation since 16th century Spain.
Hmm. So are you saying the American dream is gone for good, Hedrick? How do we get it back? What has to happen to switch this around, or is it too late?
I don't think it's too late, and it may be, Steve, because I'm a congenital optimist. and I believe in the resourcefulness and the resilience and the intelligence of the American people. What I'm worried about is that people expect somebody else to do it and not do it themselves. That's the danger here. You know, let me go back to that earlier era. If you think about the civil rights movement, there were people marching in the streets saying segregation is unfair. Jim Crow is unfair. We got to change it. The consumer movement, if people were out marching and saying, you know, we don't want cars that blow up or cause accidents, which is what Ralph Nader said they did in his book, Unsafe at Any Speed. In the environmental movement, believe it or not, 20 million people went out marching, debating, talking, college campuses, talk shows, shopping malls, marching in the streets.
And you're going to say we don't do that anymore, do we?
We don't do that anymore. And it's, what's important to remember is that after that demonstration in 1970, Congress passed 7 major pieces of environmental legislation: Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Anti-Toxic Substance Act, and Richard Nixon, who was a big buddy of big business, and he was no tree-hugging environmentalist, signed all those laws. Why? Because practical politics said you got to respond to the people. So we have to begin to believe again in power of the people. Remember that what yeah. Lincoln said, of the people, by the people, and for the people. Well, at the moment, we got a government of the 1%, by the 1%, for the 1%. We got to change that. That's up to us.
And how do you motivate people to get out there again? Because during my years covering politics, I've been envious of your generation covering this stuff because you were active in an era when people took to the streets and did all this stuff. I haven't seen much of that in my years. How do you reverse course and sort of create an ethos where people understand that, you know, speaking back to government is not only acceptable, it's what it's designed, how it's designed to work?
Yeah, well, there are people at work on that. You know, you have a group called Fair Elections. You got a group called Move On. You got a group, a campaign finance reform group. You got a group to take back the American Dream. I mean, there are people who are active. The problem is they haven't hit an issue that resonates. Occupy Wall Street actually hit an issue that resonated with people. They were complaining about the hyper-concentration of money and power on Wall Street. And when you looked at the polls, I mean, they got a majority of people sympathize with them.
Yeah.
What they didn't do was what these other movements did, which was to articulate a clear set of goals. What do? Do you break up the banks? Do you tax the banks? Do you tax the corporate guys who are getting a million stock options a year and making $200, $300, $400 million a year? I mean, there are certain things you could be advocating. They needed a specific concrete agenda so that other people could say, yeah, I support that. And, yeah, we want that to happen. And then you can actually put pressure on Congress, to pass legislation to do those things. So people have to be smart about it. And ordinary people like you and me and others have to decide, you know, this isn't going to change unless we get up off our duffs and off our couches and do something.
I get that. But you're talking about people being hit right in their own pocketbooks, not only for this month and last month, but for years, a whole bunch of recent years, and still people aren't getting up off their backsides and getting off the couches and taking to the streets or doing whatever they need to do.
You're right.
What's it going to take? If it's not let's
go back to the first question, which is why not? One reason why they haven't done it is they have been persuaded by the powers that be. And remember, this is to the advantage of the financial and the corporate and the political elite to do this. People have been persuaded that if they're not doing well, it's their fault. It's their personal fault, and they need to get out there and try harder. Or how many times have you been told they need to get a better education?
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I do in my book is to show how even with good education, college degrees and graduate degrees, we're giving away a million jobs a year through H-1B visas, and we're about to see this expanded under immigration reform to foreigners who are working for Microsoft and Intel and all kinds of other companies right here in America.
Right.
We're shipping jobs overseas out of the knowledge economy, so people who've gotten good educations, who've done exactly what the powers that be say they should do, they've taken it in the chin. We now need to understand, and this is why I believe my book is important. And there are other books like mine. And mine's not unique, but I think I've done a good job of actually documenting the history and telling personal stories so people can actually see folks like them in the book.
Right.
I'm a reporter. You're a reporter. You understand how we tell stories differently than economists do. Hopefully we tell them better and people enjoy them more. But I think people have to now understand it is a systemic problem. We have a systemic problem here. It's part economics. Yeah. It's part politics. And we can do something about it. So the first thing that has to happen is we've got to understand. I started out to write a book called The Dream at Risk. I wound up by writing a book, Who Stole the American Dream? And the reason is, the more I looked into it, the more I became convinced the dream was taken away from people. It didn't just happen. This isn't just impersonal market forces. This isn't just your fault. The people who had the political power, the people who had the financial power, the people who had the corporate power took it away from you. You've got to demand it back. So the first thing is you've got to understand it. Then the next thing is you've got to find an issue that matters to you locally here in Kansas City or in Bellingham, Washington, or in Hartford, Connecticut. Maybe it's housing in one place. Maybe it's job loss in another place. Maybe it's real estate prices like in Nevada and Arizona. I mean, you got so many people underwater in homes there with bad bubble-era loans. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So different issues are going to resonate in different places. But fairness in the economy, fairness in the tax system, fairness in our political system. I mean, our political system is so screwed up, it's unbelievable. I got deep into that. We haven't talked about the political system yet.
So
I think a lot of it has to do with understanding. And there's been a lot of smoke thrown at people.
Yeah.
People have been told lower taxes means growth. highest taxes we had in America were under Dwight Eisenhower, 92%. John F. Kennedy, 77%. We had great growth at that time. Lowest taxes we had over a period of time was George W. Bush and Barack Obama, 35%. Lousy growth. No connection between the maximum marginal tax rate and growth. So we got to get rid of the garbage that we're being told publicly. And it's partly our job, yours and mine, Steve, as journalists, to tell people what the facts are, to do the fact-checking every day, every week, every month.
Hedrick Smith is our guest. His clarion call is a new book, Who Stole the American Dream? Again, he speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch downtown, 14 West 10th Street. More information, kclibrary.org. Our phone number here for your questions and comments for Hedrick Smith, one of America's finest authors, so many great books under his belt here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate. At kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Ken from Overland Park. Ken, you're on with Hedrick Smith. Good morning.
Hi, Mr. Smith. Hello. Thank you for having me on. I agree with you 100%, and my call is specifically regarding the CFPB. I have voluntarily, for the past 4.5 years, helped over 150 people at no charge.
That's the Consumer Financial Protection Board, right, Ken?
Correct. Yes, that's correct. The CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Board. I have helped over 150 people get their home loans modified over the last 4.5 years.
Right.
Bravo to
you.
Thank you very much. In the past, when the banks have done illegal things, I turned to the governing bodies that heretofore governed them, the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, the Office of Thrift Supervision. It depends. Certain divisions of the government had aegis over certain banks. Now it has all turned over to the CFPB. I have learned recently while trying to help a gentleman who has been turned down by PNC Bank, who recently participated in an $8.4 billion fine for violating the current rules and regulations, that they're continuing to violate them. I turned to the CFPB, and long story short, after 4 months, I learned that they were not empowered by Congress to make the banks or financial institutions follow the rules or the laws. Hmm. They are merely information gatherers. They can investigate a complaint. They agree with me that PNC Bank is indeed violating the rules vis-a-vis this client I'm referring to, but they have no power to do anything about it. They can merely suggest that PNC please follow the rules and regulations as they're promulgated.
Okay, let me get a response here from Hedrick Smith.
What a great question.
Yeah, it is
a great
question.
You've raised, this is where Occupy Wall Street could actually have had some power. What happened in the Dodd-Frank bill, the bill that was passed by Congress to regulate the banks, it was gutted before it was passed by bank lobbyists. The banks hired 1,477 former government officials, former members of Congress, and former congressional staffers, including majority leaders in both the House and Senate from both parties, to lobby for them to gut this bill so that the Consumer Product Safety Board, Protection Bureau did not have the power, nor did the regulators have the power to do what you're saying. Now, people don't know that. Mm-hmm. People weren't told that. That was our failure as reporters. The press failed to tell people. But Occupy and the people advising Occupy, and there were some smart academics who understood what was going on, didn't get them to articulate this so that there were some teeth put in that law. This is where people need to connect with Congress so that things like this don't happen. What you're talking about is known in Washington talk as capture, agency capture. The controller of the currency, the Federal Reserve, the organizations, the agencies set up by government to control the banks actually get captured by the banks. I'm sorry, the last Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, was captured by the banks before he became Treasury Secretary. He was head of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Mm-hmm. The board of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York are the leaders of the biggest banks in New York. So for several years before he became Secretary of the Treasury, Geithner had worked for the heads of the biggest banks. We've now got Mary Jo White being appointed as head of the SEC. She's a great prosecuting attorney when it comes to the mafia, but she never went after big banks when she was doing that. And for the last 5 years, she's worked for a New York law firm named Debevoise and Plimpton, and she represented J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Citibank against the government. How are you going to get effective control? It's our job as reporters to get that story out, and it's people's job to respond to that and say, this is unacceptable.
Yeah. Let's go back to some calls here. Ken, thank you for your call. Let's go to Judy from Overland Park. Judy, you're on the air.
Thank you. There's two things. I am always amazed at how a lot of legislation that's on the table, we don't find out about unless it's going to be some blood and guts. It's got, you know, it's got some newsworthiness to it. But it's the meat and potato stuff that we often don't find out about where, you know, you have to hunt it down. It's not highlighted. We're not informed about it. The other thing is we are so overwhelmed by all the corruption, by all the information, and we've got a lot of technology that just slams us into ourselves. We're disconnected and insulated from each other, just trying to get by from one comfort to the other.
Right.
We need to know that there's some kind of, if we make the effort or some way to connect and feel for each other, in some way to believe that if we do step outside our door, it can have an effect, because Occupy Wall Street disintegrated.
Right.
So I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Judy,
well,
thank you.
I think you got several issues there. One of them is that you're bombarded with bits of information and you're not given a real understanding of the news in time to react to it. I couldn't agree more. I can't believe it, getting back in myself, Steve, into the news business. I'm writing blogs and so forth now. The appetite of the news business for what happened in the last 3 hours, we want to win this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
We're not out to understand and help people understand
That's
the news.
Right.
We want to win this cycle. We want to get more. So can you give me a more sensational lead? I've run into this on my own blogs. I wrote a blog for CNN, and I wrote it about trying to talk about the trends that I've been talking about here over 30 or 40 years and relate it to Obama's State of the Union address. The day it went in, they liked it. 2 days later, they said, can you change it? Because Obama's not going to – he's now – wait a second. It was his inaugural I wrote about it. They said, no, the State of the Union's coming up. Can you change it? I said, yeah, I can change it. And then the next thing you know, Eric Cantor said something. He said, can you change it and put it lead on Cantor? I said, I don't respect you guys and the news you're doing. I'm not going to change it. No, because you're missing the larger picture. So you do have a legitimate complaint. You've got to go find news sources that will provide you really solid news and understanding, like Steve Kraske and hopefully like the New York Times.
Yeah.
Secondly, you really do have to focus on people in Congress who understand. Elizabeth Warren, who helped set up Consumer Product Safety Bureau, has been elected senator from Massachusetts. She understands how the banks are taking everybody to the cleaners. You need to follow what people like, she says. Carl Levin from Michigan has run investigations of the banks. You need to follow what he has to say about it. There are people there who are beacons, who are telling truth to power, telling truth to the public. Those are the folks you need to follow. That's where you're going to get your guidance. And I hope, frankly, that my book will help you as well.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very stimulating conversation here with Hedrick Smith, his book, Who Stole the American Dream? He speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch downtown, 14 West 10th Street. In our second half, we'll turn to some of the governmental options here. What can Congress and the president do to deal with this? And later on this hour, we'll deal with we'll have a visit from Tom Smith, an award-winning actor, musician, composer, and producer who's also blind. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about last year's drought and how it might affect farms, ranches, and food prices, or our look at railroads experimenting with liquefied natural gas, you can find that in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. In America, you listen to radio. In Soviet Russia, radio listened to you. Tomorrow on the program, comedian Yakov Smirnov joins us in our studios to talk about this country and why he's leaving Branson for a comedy tour. Well, for this segment, we're still visiting with Hedrick Smith, author of the new book, Who Stole the American Dream? Hedrick, you say multiple solutions are needed, and you suggest what's basically a liberal manifesto. You want business leaders and saying they need to share more of their profits with workers. workers. Governments need to upgrade and modernize highways, ports, and airports and retrain workers. How do you convince the business world to share more of its wealth going forward?
Well, part of it, you just put heat on them make them, remind them that there was a time when business leaders like Charlie Wilson of General Motors or Reg Jones of General Electric actually believed in sharing the wealth, thought it was smart. Henry Ford understood that if he paid his workers a $5 a day, they could actually afford to buy the Model Ts that his company was producing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason we're having a long, slow jobless recovery, and thank God we had a better report this last month, but 1 month doesn't make a recovered economy.
Yeah.
The reason we're having so much trouble, frankly, is the middle class is being paid low wages. Low wages means low consumer demand. Low consumer demand means business sits on a couple of $1 trillion of money that the business leaders, the CEOs, are not willing to invest. So it's not smart for them either. I mean, if the economy were growing better, we'd both have more tax revenues, we'd have more corporate revenues, and we'd have much better standard of living. So part of it is doing that. But I think another thing to do is to change the corporate tax laws. I mean, they're crazy. We now reward corporations for moving jobs overseas. If you have profits overseas, you pay a lower tax rate than if you have if you create jobs.
But we keep talking about this. I've heard this line a lot of times from folks who come in here, but it's not changing.
Yeah. Well, the reason is we're not putting enough heat on the White House. I don't know why we have a president who ran on jobs and growth and who believes in what I just said is not talking about that. Paul Ryan is dominating the news today with a budget that repeats the same kind of budget that Newt Gingrich proposed in 1994. How is that news? Mm-hmm. That's not really dealing with our problems. So we need to put some heat on the White House as well as other places. I mean, you know, people need to let the last election was run on jobs and growth. Since the last election, we haven't talked about jobs and growth. We've talked about the government budget. We've talked about deficits.
And
what
we don't
about
talk
the human
about,
deficits?
And we don't talk about who stole the American dream either. We don't talk about the middle class in this country, do we?
No. Well, I thought—
It's not part of the dialogue yet.
Well, I learned something about politics back when Tip O'Neill was Speaker of the House. And effective and Ronald Reagan was president. People who are effective politicians campaign and govern on themes— There's the Fair Deal, mm-hmm. there's the New Deal, there's the New Frontier. That tells you what the theme is. I thought Obama's first administration was about the middle class agenda. The stimulus was for middle class. That was for jobs. The health care bill was for the middle class. It was for better health care coverage. The financial regulatory bill was for the middle class. The Consumer Protection Bureau is mm-hmm. to protect the middle class from bad loans, from shyster banks, and so forth. But Obama never called it that. So people didn't understand that's what he was about.
Yeah.
We don't know what his second term is about. Is it about gun control? Is it about immigration reform?
Yeah.
Is it about balancing the budget? Is it about a balanced budget? No, it's about a fair budget. What about fairness? I mean, so part of the problem here is our political leaders have got to articulate themes that we can relate to, and then we need to rally to them. We need to be supportive of those who are smart enough to understand what they're after and to articulate it in ways that we can relate to. And then we, the press, have to explain it.
Pulitzer Prize winner Hedrick Smith's our guest. Let's grab a couple more phone calls. Let's go to Alan from Lenexa. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. This is a great show. It's long overdue. I think the founding fathers believed if their novel form of government was to survive, it required an educated, informed and involved electorate led by a free press that's in the Bill of Rights. And the press is supposed to be our ears and eyes on government. They need to be telling us what's going on, not giving us spin and height and sound bites.
Well, Hedrick, you know as well as anyone, the press isn't what it used to be.
I couldn't agree more. And I think part of the problem is it's short term. It's the short-termism. They're worried about, as I said before, this news cycle, this day. And the more people put pressure back on the press, whether it's the Kansas City Star, whether it's this NPR station, whether it's whatever you're listening to, if you gravitate away from things that are giving you short-term, if you look at the blogs on the internet, it is astonishing how much junk is out there.
Boy.
I mean, it's just astonishing. So people have to use their own brains and gravitate to the news media that are giving you an understanding, not just information, but an understanding and straight talk. And if you do, and you reward them with a larger audience, other news media will follow.
Let's go to Brent from Kansas City, Missouri. Brent, you're on the air with Hedrick Smith. Good morning.
Good morning. I know that this is not the solution, but I mean, I think it might be a step towards fixing some of the over-profitization of the corporate America. Why not have the committees and agencies that regulate a specific area, like the FTC or the FCC, why not have those businesses that are regulated by them just pay directly for the operation of that government agency?
Why not have industries pay for their own regulation, Hedrick?
Because the piper calls the tune. Whoever pays the piper calls the tune. If you haven't paid, actually,
meaning
that if you get the companies that are supposed to be regulated by the FCC or take the FDA, because that's actually going on with the FDA right now, and it's been going on for quite a while, what happens is you take the teeth out of the regulator because they get their money. They're going to cut off the source of their money by getting tough on it? Uh-uh. Not going to happen. You need independent funding. I know that as a producer of PBS documentaries. If I wanted to do a documentary, and I literally did this at one point, a documentary on the internet, and IBM offered to put some money into funding it, I said, I'm not taking your money, because if I need to deal with IBM in an unfavorable way, you're going to have a fit and pull your money out. Mm-hmm. I can't do my job independently. You don't want the people who are being regulated paying the regulators.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it right there. Hedrick Smith again speaks this evening at 6:30, the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, 14 West 10th Street downtown, RSVP at kclibrary.org. His new book is Who Stole the American Dream? Hedrick, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming in today.
I love being with
really
you,
enjoyed
Steve.
It.
You got great listeners. I like your audience.
Smart crew.
Yeah,
thanks
good.
So much.
Yeah.